This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Joining me today in the JPR studios is the band White Horse. It's Melissa McClelland and Luke Doucette. They're out in support of their newest record called Leave No Bridge Unburned. Not unturned, but unburned. Information at their website, whitehorsemusic.ca. Melissa, Luke, welcome to Jefferson Public Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
It's nice to meet you. You guys have played music with one another for quite a few years now, even before there was a White Horse, correct?
Correct. We actually met through the Toronto music scene about a decade ago. And at the time, we were both making solo records. And Luke produced my first record. And so that, you know, we met in a professional sense. And it quickly was unprofessional.
Well, I'm glad that you broached the subject, yeah. Because I was going to ask, how long did it take before there were some sparks beyond music?
What kind of details would you like?
Very, very bland, safe for radio details.
We held hands quickly.
Really?
I don't know. You know what? This making music's a pretty intimate thing, right? And I was in a position of being the producer, so-called at the time. It's just an intimate thing, and yeah.
But we didn't form White Horse for, you know, maybe 7-8 years after that. So we continued with our solo records and we toured separately. We played in each other's bands occasionally, but we didn't form White Horse until, I think, around 4 years ago.
And so the chronology is making music with one another, becoming interested in one another, getting married, and then forming White Horse.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is that how it worked out?
Pretty much, yeah. We had, for a long time, we'd talked about amalgamating the two things together, the two careers, but we'd both worked so hard to develop the followings we had as solo artists that the concern was we don't have much to spare. Like, if putting these two things together, does 1 + 1 = 2 or 2.5 or 3, or does 1 + 1 = 0.75? And it's hard to know, hard to predict. You know, as it turns out, it was really good for us. And it changed things creatively for us as well. We became a band, and bands think differently than solo artists. Mm. You're sharing different parts of your brains.
You have each in interviews talked separately about how the existence of the other makes your own music better. At a certain point, do you just get to a realization that it's impractical, especially with you now being married, to be running two bands where you're in each other's band? And why don't we just focus on one specific thing and make music together as one unified entity?
Absolutely. I think that was definite. I think there were a lot of different elements, and I think practicality was definitely something we thought about, and it's much easier to tour together. But I think also just a decade of, you know, sharing a musical brain in a way, you know, being in the same home and writing songs to each other and trying out stuff on each other and being in the studio together and touring and playing in each other's bands, you start to really develop this kind of unspoken musical communication that happens. And it's really a beautiful thing when that happens, and it feels really good creatively. And I think we recognized that, and we thought, well, we need to tap into this a little more and see where it can take us.
I also think that, as it turns out, and this is just the luck of the draw, we tend to complete parts of each other. You know, there are things about my music that there were gaps in things I wasn't as good at, part of it was just certain different songwriting styles that would sort of, we're both better songwriters because we bring different things to the table, and we're both better musicians because we bring different things to the table. And I think the sound of the music that when I was making it on my own, there were things about my music that, like anybody, you know, that you're strong at this and you're not strong at that, and bringing two disparate different personalities and musical approaches into one, it produces a good thing. I mean, I'm loath to use the Lennon and McCartney example because it's too grandiose, but but at the same time, you know, they weren't the same kind of musician, they weren't the same kind of writers, and what they produced together, particularly in the middle period when they were actually writing together, is pretty spectacular.
You guys have managed to trample on a couple of mantras that are often used in music, which is never date a band member and don't work with your spouse.
Yeah.
But it seems to be working okay for you guys.
So far, so good. And now we have a 8-month-old baby thrown into the mix. So yeah, we are testing the limits.
White Horse is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. Their new record is called Leave No Bridge Unburned. Information on the band, whitehorsemusic.ca. It is indeed a Canadian website. It's Melissa McClelland and Luke Doucette. What do you guys want to do first today?
This song is called Baby What's Wrong, and it's the opening track to our new record.
Was that your fate? Walking down Fifth Street, it was on your head, but it was looking at your feet. Your steely eyes, the meanest blue, betrayed a bitter darkness inside you.
Baby, what's wrong?
I'm afraid to ask you.
Baby, what's wrong?
Tell me, what did he do? Is there no loving in the aftermath of a sad, sad song?
I see your hands,
the way they hide up your sleeve, your slender little fingers in a tight white fist that was meant for me. I'm not the one who hurt you, I'm just passing by. I would dry your big wet tears if you would let me try.
Baby, what's wrong?
I'm afraid to ask you.
Baby, what's wrong?
Tell me, what did he do? Is there no loving in the aftermath of a sad, sad song? About a girl and boy with a handful of his hair. She tells him, you are my toy. She winds him up so tight that he can barely breathe, lying in a tangled mess that he can never leave.
Baby, what's wrong?
I'm afraid to ask you.
Baby, what's wrong?
Tell me, what did he do?
Is there no loving in the aftermath of a sad, sad song? Baby, what's wrong?
I'm afraid to ask you.
Baby, what's wrong?
Tell me, what did he do? Is there no loving in the aftermath of a sad, sad song? Is there no loving in the aftermath of a sad, sad song?
That is White Horse live on Jefferson Public Radio. It's music from their new record called Leave No Bridge Unburned. It's Melissa McClelland and Luke Doucette live in the studios today. So previous records have come from the arena of two guitars, more acoustic-based singer-songwriter stuff. Not so much on this new record. It is a much bigger, fuller, richer sound. What prompted the decision to augment the two of you with extra help and make more of a almost rock sounding record at times?
I think it's always been a part of what we do. On the first record, on Passenger, there's fuzz bass and there's always Luke's Gretsch guitar plugged in to Stun.
Which we'll have a picture of on our website. It's a beautiful guitar.
I think the thing that really made the difference on this record was the way that the drums were produced. And we really took a new approach with the drums, and that was because we worked with producers for the first time, Gus Van Gogh and Werner F. And they really took a lot of time to create a big and precise drum sound. Parts that they had really thought out in advance and then kind of laid out to create this incredible space and kind of this booming energy. So I think right off the bat, the drums were the first things that were recorded. And I think it just kind of laid the groundwork for the rest of the record.
Luke has described the two of you as, Melissa, you being more of the folky and Luke being more of the conservative dad rock. Is that true?
That's sort of funny. I don't remember when I would have said that, but that is humorous because, I mean, you know, I suppose I have a soft spot for the Tom Petty's and the Dire Straits of the world. I will admit that reluctantly. But, you know, that's also kind of crap what I said. That's maybe not real. Melissa's not necessarily any folkier than I am. I mean, I grew up in a house where there was a lot of, you know, there was Tom Waits and Randy Newman and Willie Nelson and, you know, Neil Young, all kinds of folk music or roots music or American songbook stuff. That was part of my upbringing. So there's as much of that in my world. I think that if anything, because I play the loud guitar, I come across as the guy who is more of the rock and roll ilk. But again, I don't know that we would necessarily want to put ourselves, Melissa and I, into those different boxes. We share a brain, we share a musical heart to a large degree, and sometimes she's pushing the envelope to be more experimental and to be more brash, and sometimes I am. It just depends on where we are.
Well, and you mentioned growing up. Both of you are Canadian. Melissa, you were born in the States, though, actually, right?
Yeah, I carry two passports, but I moved to Canada when I was 3 years old, so I spent the majority of my life there.
And whereabouts are we talking about?
I was born in Chicago, and then I moved to Burlington, which is a suburb of Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about you, Luke?
Born in the 70s, so I spent the 70s in Halifax, Nova Scotia, the 80s in Winnipeg, Manitoba, the 90s in Vancouver, BC, and then I moved to Toronto around the turn of the millennium, and that's where I've sort of called home for a decade and a half, although Melissa and I have auditioned other hometowns at different times, Nashville, New York City, Hamilton, Ontario, among them, and we've just found ourselves settling back in Toronto recently, so I'm not sure what that means, but there we are.
Nashville works for a lot of people. Didn't work for you guys, though, huh?
You know, I wouldn't want to say Nashville didn't work for us. We did it wrong. I don't think you move to a city when you're on tour all the time, because then what that place represents is somewhere you just sit between legs of a tour, and in our case, it was for 4 or 5 days at a time, or maybe at the most 10 days or 2 weeks. And when you've been on the road a lot, if you're going to take some downtime, what that downtime should represent is time with your friends and family. And we were stuck in a neighborhood in a new city we didn't know very well, and we weren't working. It's not like we were out there sort of pounding the pavement, making friends, and trying to get sessions and do co-writes and do all the things that Nashville can afford you the opportunity to do. We were resting between legs of tours, so we just did it wrong.
The idea of having friends and family around is probably amplified now that you have a young child that you're dealing with too,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Home takes on a whole new meaning.
Yeah. Melissa McClelland and Luke Doucette are my guests live today in the studios. The band Whitehorse, the new record is called Leave No Bridge Unburned. WhitehorseMusic.ca is the website to read and see much more on both of them individually and collectively in the band Whitehorse. What do you guys want to play next?
This is a song called Tame as the Wild Ones, and we were recording partly in Toronto, partly in Brooklyn, and Gus and I were heading out one evening to go out and have some cocktails, and Melissa was going to stay home. And as we were walking out the front door, Melissa said, "Whoa, wait a minute, maybe I'll try and write a song. Gus, what does the record need? What don't we have yet?" And he's like, "We don't have a sexy song. We need a sexy song." And this song is dedicated to to our new son, who is proof that the song was wildly successful in our house.
To me, hell-bent on heavenly dreams. Oh, will I bury my feelings alive?
Your hands, they travel like sin. Defenses are growing so thin. I keep still while better intentions die.
Tame as the wild ones who shout out from rooftops in small towns. We swoon and we sway, we make our way home. Oh, this love, it won't leave me alone.
And stains my footprints, indelible traces of mine.
Your thoughts have long come undone, millions and millions of moments in one. I'm swimming, these feelings cannot be out. Run.
Tame as the wild ones who shout out from rooftops in small towns. We swoon and we sway, we make our way home. Oh, this love, it won't leave. Feels cool by the nighttime air, pleasantly smoking by dawn. Tame as the wild ones who shout out from rooftops in small towns. We swoon and we sway, we make our way home. Oh, this love, it won't leave me alone. Strange things have happened to me.
That is White Horse live on Jefferson Public Radio, a tune from the new record called Leave No Bridge Unburned. It's Melissa McClelland and Luke Doucette live on JPR. I want to ask you guys about the name of the album, because there is a bit of a backstory to what you choose for the names of your albums, and yeah. And there's some meaning there.
Well, we're always trying to be as dramatic and epic as sort of histrionic as possible, because it's more fun. And when I mentioned earlier, when you're in a band, things are different. You know, sometimes the singer-songwriter world can be a little bit navel-gazy. And when we became a band, we're like, hey, we can be whatever we want, because now we're a rock and roll band. And that's fun. You get to wear different costumes and take on different personas. But Leave No Bridge Unburned was initially just a concept that a friend of mine from back in Winnipeg came up with as a joke at the expense of my family, because we all suffer similarly from a terrible case of foot and mouth disease, and people shoot their mouths off and it ends up coming back to haunt one another. So that was sort of initially the idea. But, you know, we have our families out here, and as you've pointed out earlier, we're breaking a whole bunch of cardinal rules about life in general, working with your spouse for one thing, but also, you know, we make music, we drive around the country, and it's difficult to feel like you have any sort of sense of consistent understanding of what's going to happen next or what your life's going to look like, whether it's the month or the week or the year. So there's always a feeling like we're kind of out there, renegade, gonzo style, seeing what's going to happen. And I was inspired. We were both inspired a little bit by the Bogdanovich film Running Down a Dream, the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers story, speaking of my affinity for dad rock. They talk about the fact that in 1978, while they were getting ready to release Down the Torpedoes, they were engaged in a fairly long and protracted battle with their record label. And that at the end of the day, they thought, you know what, let's just do this. Let's just put the record out. And Damn the Torpedoes was an adage at the time referring to the merchant marine ships, British merchant marine ships who were going to cross the English Channel in the Second World War, knowing full well there were U-boats in the ocean and that there was a good chance they weren't going to make it. So the concept was, damn the torpedoes, let's go anyway. And we thought that was kind of inspiring and to some degree represented a little bit of how we felt about what we were about to do. So we sort of stole it.
And we kind of stuck with our last record was called The Fate of the World Depends on This Kiss. And we kind of liked the apocalyptic overtones of that. And that was actually taken from the Templeton Diner in Vancouver. And it was a Wonder Woman comic book strip. And some leading man character was saying this to Wonder Woman, the fate of the world depends on this kiss.
It's a pretty sleazy pickup line, you got to admit, right?
Melissa McClelland and Luke Doucette are my guests today in the studio. They are the band Whitehorse, the new record, Leave No Bridge Unburned. Before I have you guys play one last tune, you have released an album in French.
Mais oui.
Please translate the title of it for me.
Éphémère sans repère.
Well, that's true. And it was that what we did is we sort of reconfigured and translated some songs off Fate of the World Depends on This Kiss. So Éphémère sans repère is not a direct translation at all, but it tries to capture a little bit of the emotional intent behind that title.
And it was Pierre Marchand from Montreal who did all the translations with us.
Both of you, I'm assuming, are fluent or pretty darn near fluent in French? No.
This guy is.
You know, and it's funny, I have a better facility with the French language than Melissa, but not necessarily for any reason that makes a whole lot of sense. I just, like, yes, my family are Acadian. My father's Acadian, Acadian meaning the east coast of Canada, primarily in his case, from Cape Breton Island of Nova Scotia. He's Doucette. But I was raised in an Anglophone household. My mother is Irish Canadian. My parents split up when I was quite young, and nobody ever spoke French at home. Mm. So we both are products of the French immersion system in Canada, which is fairly ubiquitous, and it's most kids have the opportunity to learn a second language in school, and it tends to be French. So
what does recording an album in French do for you that you couldn't accomplish recording an album in English? I mean, is there a subset of Whitehorse audience that knows you and follows you because of the French record?
We made that record expressly for the Quebec market. Montreal is about 50-50 French-English. Quebec is 98% Francophone. So, and the thing about Quebec that's different than the rest of Canada, well, it's not even that it's different. When we tour in Canada, we'll play in maybe 20 markets. I mean, not to use industry speak, but 20 cities, towns that we feel like we can go to and people will come hear us play. And we became aware of the fact that there are almost that many yet again in Quebec alone. But you can't just go to Quebec and play if you're a band from Toronto. They'd hate nothing more. They'd rather you came from Miami or from Oxnard than if you came from Toronto. Well, Quebec people despise Toronto. And so there are a couple of rules. You have to either bring French product or you can be English, but you have to be from Quebec. So they're unwritten rules, but they're real. They're real rules. Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, how do we get into Quebec? And we wanted to see the rest of that. And we've seen Canada. We've been coast to coast in the English parts of Canada a million times. And I've been to Quebec. We've been to Quebec City. We've been to Montreal. We've done spent some time. But it's, there are 12 million people in the province of Quebec or something like that. They don't all live in Montreal and Quebec City. They live all over the province. So we knew there are all these places we could play if we could just find a way to get our music to people. So we thought, well, we speak French enough that we could do it. If we found a translator, maybe we could put something out that people would dig, and it worked.
Was it harder to figure out the meter of the lyrics of the songs in a different language?
It was so difficult. I mean, you use so many more syllables in French, so translating was difficult. And we basically had to retell the stories, and we were very lucky that we had Pierre to help us with that. And then, learning just the muscle memory of the words alone. It was really a lot of hard work to relearn the songs in French, but really satisfying.
I would imagine when you're actually performing them, sometimes certain elements of performing go on autopilot a little bit. Like if it's a guitar solo or an instrumental break in the middle of the song, you're thinking about that rather than lyrics, and it might be easy to pop back and forth. Did you ever find yourself?
Absolutely. There's this incredible muscle memory that happens between your hands and your mouth and your mind and everything. And there was one song in particular that we've been playing for years and years and years. And as soon as I tried to sing it in French, I forgot the chords. I forgot my harmony part. I had to relearn the song in a sense. And then going back to singing the songs in English was a challenge as well.
Yeah, paradoxically, we would spend a week in Quebec playing the songs and doing press and communicating in French, and really, like, it's a crash course in trying to exist in a second language. It's so incredible to be able to pull that off and or to survive it and to be able to come back and go, wow, what did we just do? Because you learn so much in a small period of time. Mm-hmm. And then we'd go back to Ontario or back to English-speaking Montreal and play a show and have to relearn the English because we had retrained our minds and the muscle memory. We sort of re-exercise the muscles so that they were now thinking in French, and to go back was also challenging.
Mm. Your previous album was nominated for the Polaris Prize. A lot of folks down in the States have some awareness of the Juno Awards being kind of the Canadian equivalent of our Grammys. What is the significance of the Polaris? How does it work or balance with Juno Award nominations?
Well, the Polaris Awards, they try to eliminate politics altogether. So first of all, it's all critics across Canada, journalists and critics. They place their votes.
So nobody from the industry.
Nobody from the industry. And then how does it work on the actual day of the Polaris Awards in the back room? There's a jury.
There's a jury, and they don't actually know. Like, they have the process set up in such a way that at every stage of the game, people will cast their votes, but it's done sort of in secret, so that little teams can't be formed. And at the end of the day, once they select a winner, nobody knows except the person who has the envelope in their hand. So they do their best to try and, I guess it's modeled after the Mercury Prize in Britain.
Sure.
Where maybe one of the differences with the Mercury Prize is that bands like Arctic Monkeys won the Mercury Prize, and they went on to become superstars. Whereas the Polaris Prize, although famous people have won in the past, Feist won, but she was already kind of a household name at that point. Did the Arcade Fire win it?
I think they won.
I think they won it, and they were also a big deal at the time. But it hasn't necessarily, I don't know that it's produced a big star. I think it has rewarded some stars.
But the recognition of it is that essentially, if you are one of the nominees for the Polaris, you have been chosen as having created one of the 10 best records in all of Canada in all music genres.
Well, five.
Wow.
Five, right.
No, you know, the short list, I'm just joking and making a big deal.
The short list is 10.
Is it 10?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I happen to know we were in the top five.
Well, it's not, and the interesting thing is it's not based on album sales at all. And the winner this past year was Tanya Tagak, who's an Inuit throat singer. So that just goes to show you how interesting it is.
Well, it has been a pleasure to meet you both. Thank you for coming by and visiting with us.
Thank you.
It's Luc Doucette and Melissa McClellan, the band White Horse. The new record is called Leave No Bridge Unburned. What do you want to wrap up with?
We're going to play a song called Sweet Disaster, and this was essentially a love song that I wrote for Luc, but it was inspired by the Mars One journey, the one-way trip to Mars.
Galileo was bluffing. Just a mess out here. There's no compass to guide us through the flashes of violence and fear. Oh, pinball and a motorhome, black kettle. Sand bleeds through our fingers. If time said it stood still, it lied. Oh, 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 oh. You will get the best of me. Worlds collide, it's a recipe for disaster. Sweet disaster. Kilimanjaro bust. There are no mountains to move here. You just do what you say, what you must. For disaster, sweet disaster.
That is White Horse live on Jefferson Public Radio. It's Luke Doucette and Melissa McClelland. Guys, thanks again for coming by.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
White Horse's new record is called Leave No Bridge Unburned. More information on the band at whitehorsemusic.ca.